Good morning, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, what does the shakeup at the Department of Education mean for current and future student loan borrowers? And could it lead to future reforms with an even greater impact on the cost of a college degree? Also this morning, a Flashback Friday. President Trump wants to create a federal stockpile of digital assets and make America the cryptocurrency capital of the world. And there is much money to be made, but the most important part of the Bitcoin story has little to do with investing in it. And we have some hearty Irish recipes for St. Patrick's Day from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, March 14th, 2025. The total lunar eclipse, a pretty cool way to kick off your Pi Day. And as made-up holidays go, March 14th is a pretty good one. National Pi Day, inspired by the never-ending number 3.14, which, again, if you remember your high school science or math class, is the mathematical constant pi. Which is the relationship between a circle's circumference and its area or something. I don't know. Anyway, it's Pi Day. And as you might guess, there are a lot of specials out there. Burger King actually has a pretty sweet offer for Pi Day. You can get a free slice of Hershey pie at Burger King as long as you spend $3.14, which sounds fair for Pi Day. Marco's sell you a medium pizza for $3.14 if you buy a large or extra large pie. CeCe's Pizza offering pretty much the same deal. A lot of pizza joints are leaning into the Pi Day thing in one way, shape, or form. At 7-Eleven stores, you can get a whole pizza pie for $3.14 if you order it in the app. And I think the Speedway stores are doing that as well, being owned by 7-Eleven and all of that. So lots of deals to be had for Pi Day, which seems appropriate. Like I said, as made up holidays go, Pi Day, pretty good one there. Let's see here. Monday, of course, is St. Patrick's Day. And so, you know, a lot of people will be celebrating over the weekend. But Monday actually is St. Patrick's Day, where everyone has permission to be a little Irish. I'm having trouble this morning. I don't know. Well, my problem is I can't seem to talk. It is Friday. It's been a long week. Wallet Hub has put together a list of the top cities for Irish celebrations for St. Patty's Day. And at the top of the list, no big surprise, Boston, where more than 13% of the city's residents have Irish roots. So Boston, the number one city for St. Patrick's Day. And their St. Patrick's Day parade in Boston dates all the way back to 1724. After that on the list is Reno, Nevada, which was a surprise, but I guess Reno, they lean into St. Patrick's Day with a downtown event known as the Reno Leprechaun Crawl and the annual Leprechaun Race, where runners dress for the occasion. So Reno, Nevada, the number two spot for a St. Patrick's Day celebration. Number three, Savannah, Georgia. The port city sees 500,000 visitors a year on St. Patrick's Day with a parade and plenty of revelry throughout the city's historic squares. So if you were thinking of traveling for St. Patrick's Day, those are the cities to visit. Ironically, in Chicago, where they dye the river green every year, the Windy City only ranks number six on Wallet Hub's list of the top St. Patrick's Day cities, which I thought was kind of it. I would have guessed higher with that. The top Ohio cities on the list to celebrate St. Patrick's Day are Akron and Cleveland at number 41 and number 42, respectively. So if you want to celebrate all things green, those are your best destinations. Let's see. A couple of other items here. Among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. I guess this ties into St. Patrick's Day in a sense because it's research out of Ireland. Researchers are warning about giving children slushies. You don't want to allow your kids to have a slushie. The reason, and, you know, this is another one of those doom and gloom stories. It's, every day, we've got to have a doom and gloom story, something that we are worried about, fearful of, concerned over. You know, a we're all going to die story. Something that's all doom and gloom, and this is it. Researchers out of Ireland warning about giving children slushies that contain glycerol. This is a naturally occurring sweetener that is used to stop slushies from freezing solid. So it's the reason why slushies are slushies and not just solid ice. The glycerol. I don't know how you pronounce it. Glycerol. Glycerol. You look for that in the ingredients list. If it's there, don't give it to your kids. Researchers found 21 cases of children between the ages of 2 and 7 who actually needed emergency treatment after ingesting this sweetener. Some of the symptoms: nausea, low blood sugar, loss of consciousness. So this has some pretty serious effects. They recommend avoiding slushies with glycerol until at least the age of 8. That's when the body can process this. Younger than that, and the children's bodies just haven't developed the necessary means to counteract the negative effects. They do point out thousands of children will drink slushies without any ill effects. But nonetheless, there have been 21 cases, and this is serious stuff. So make sure that you keep your kids away from slushies. Study published in the journal Archives of Disease in Childhood. So this is serious stuff. Our doom and gloom story. Slushies are killing our kids, apparently. I mean, I'm not trying to minimize it, but 21 cases out of how many millions of slushies do kids consume every day, every year? I don't know. But make of that information, do with that what you will. And finally, here among the first things you need to know, most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, maybe after a long, hard week at work, you need to just let it all out. And apparently, that can be a healthy thing to do. This is an online thread on Reddit where experts weighing in on ways to release the stress of a tough work day, tough work week. Maybe you've got something going on in your personal life, whatever. If you just need to let out all of that stress, a good scream can be healthy. People online saying that you go on a hike and just scream into the void, it can actually be a stress reliever and a good thing for your mental health. One commenter says, I just do it in the car while I'm driving on the freeway. I've been known to do that, but it's not because, I mean, it's because of something that's gone on the freeway. You know, it's not a stress reliever after a rough week. It's just something I will occasionally do. Arthur Janov actually developed what he called primal therapy all the way back in the 1960s. So there is some history to support screaming as a release. He said his primal therapy is a method that encourages screaming to release negative emotions. Screaming engages the vagus nerve, okay, which helps regulate the nervous system. According to trauma expert Samantha Silverman, if you are going to have a good scream, you may want to pick a private place where you will not scare or disturb others. If you find yourself needing to scream frequently or struggling to manage your emotions, speaking with a therapist may help you uncover deeper sources of stress, she says. So if screaming doesn't do it for you, maybe you need to see a therapist, get professional help. But occasionally having to scream to let it all out, not anything to be concerned about. As a matter of fact, it may be a healthy thing for you to do. So there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny skies expected today with a high in the mid-70s. Partly cloudy tonight with a low around 60. Some Ohio lawmakers are asking the White House to move NASA headquarters to the Buckeye State.
The pitch comes in a letter led by U.S. Senator John Husted and Representative Max Miller, making the case that they move the federal headquarters to Northeast Ohio once NASA's D.C. lease is up in 2028.
That letter references the state's rich aerospace history and lower operational costs. They argue the move would save taxpayers money while maintaining access to world-class research and development. Florida and Texas are also making plays to become NASA's new home.
ONN's Russ Mitchell and Christy Paul reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library says during last year's active storm season, it became more than just a place for books, it became a shelter. When tornado warnings were issued, patrons, staff, and even those passing through downtown found safety in their lower-level meeting rooms. The library says while the main library floor closes during warnings, its front doors and parking garage entrance remain open to anybody in need of a secure place to wait out the storm. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library says as we head into another storm season, they're hoping for calm skies, but if severe weather strikes, know that their doors will be open for you. Get more in this story on our website. The Ohio Department of Transportation is seeking input on its statewide transportation improvement plan. The plan identifies the multimodal transportation improvement projects that are scheduled for implementation throughout the state over the next 4 years. We have a link to the plan where you can leave your comments in the story on our website. The Black Swamp Area Council of Scouting America held its 2024 Eagle Scout and Youth Recognition event. The event honored the achievements of the 76 young men and women who earned the rank of Eagle Scout in 2024. The Black Swamp Area Council says these young men and women have demonstrated exceptional commitment, leadership, and service, embodying the values of Scouting America. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, the Trump administration's latest target of a reimagined federal government has put the Department of Education squarely in the crosshairs. Between the question of who will administer the student loan program if the department is eliminated, to the future of a number of popular federal plans that offer borrowers affordable payments and a pathway to eventual student loan forgiveness, there is, to say the least, a lot of uncertainty right now. Jack Wallace is Director of Government and Public Affairs at YRefi, a Phoenix-based private student loan refinance company. And Jack, I guess uncertainty, maybe putting it mildly, this has the potential to create real chaos for a lot of students and their families if it hasn't already.
It might be that we're getting some good chaos, because not only have you had the administration in the previous presidency going around Congress rather than through Congress to get these various programs that they wanted to give forgiveness to everybody to. You've now got the courts that have been involved for the course of the last year and a half, starting with the Supreme Court in June of 2023. And then last summer, we had two of the federal district courts get in on the SAVE program. And we just had, which has caused the most recent chaos, about 2 weeks ago, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against the SAVE program and put ICR and IBR and pay-as-you-earn, as well as SAVE, you know, on the back burner for now. So it's a lot to digest here
yeah.
for the student loan borrower.
So kind of taking some of these piece by piece here, the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. This is a program that President George W. Bush signed into law in 2007, allows many not-for-profit and government employees to have their student loans canceled after 10 years of payments. The order asked the department to ensure the definition of public service aligns with the administration. Why is that so controversial?
Well, because what they did during the Biden administration and just about everything they touched was to take the definitions and expand them, and the White House specifically addressed that to make sure that the people that are getting the benefit of this forgiveness, you know, it was what it was intended to back in the day when it was signed by Bush 43 and passed by the Congress in 07. And that is to get to the teachers, to get to the cops, to get to the firemen, and to assist them, and not to assist these federal bureaucrats that have made a lifetime of working in Washington for nonprofits or for the federal government, you know, after they've gone to fancy, expensive law schools.
Now, you also referenced the SAVE plan, and that was last month, that favorable court decision halting the implementation of the SAVE plan. That is the Biden-era income-driven repayment plan that was intended to lower monthly payments, halt runaway interest, and again, offer a pathway to student loan forgiveness. You are in favor of scrapping this program?
Yeah, I mean, look, the issue is, you know, you've got to do this through Congress. And so what Biden did during the last 4 years was go around Congress. And so what we've got to do is we've got to do it legally. We've got to do it properly. And in the meetings that I had earlier last week, you know, there seems to be consensus to want to stop the confusion. And perhaps once we get through this budget situation this week, the next week or two as well, and the follow-up stuff, that you will see perhaps piecemeal legislation coming out of the House and the Senate and going to the President that will, you know, create one or two repayment programs that are favorable to borrowers in helping them repay their $1.7 trillion in federal student loans. We're not going to get a big Higher Education Act reform bill like we used to get. But I think you'll see some piecemeal stuff done on the issue of the repayment plans and getting it down to, you know, one or two, as well as the Pell Grant program being reformed as well.
Well, that's actually what I was going to ask is what comes next? What more could be coming in terms of changes? Does this administration want to end federal student loan guarantees, Pell Grants? I mean, what's coming next?
No, I mean, if you look, I mean, there was some confusion back in January when that OMB memo came out, and people read the headline of the memo but didn't read the fine print. And the fine print said that loans or monies being delivered to individuals would not be impacted. So the student loan program and the Pell Grant program were exempt from the get-go. Now, having said that, you know, you could see student loan reform coming on the way in which you know, the student loan program gets delivered. You know, we've got to go back to lender of last resort at the federal government level, as opposed to lender of first resort, which is what Obama did in 2010 when he privatized the federal student loan program. Now, on the issue of the Pell Grant program, I think what you're going to see is an expansion of that program. There is consensus in the House and the Senate on both sides of the aisle with regard to doing what we call short-term programs, certificate programs, or other academic programs that would include internships or apprenticeships, and having the Pell Grant program pay for that. One of the things we need to do is fund the Pell Grant program, because under the Biden administration, they expanded the eligibility of Pell Grants, but they didn't fund it.
couple of other points that I want to get your thoughts on. Some Republicans have proposed capping how much students could borrow for education,
right,
and even putting colleges on the hook for repayment if a student fails to graduate. Do those items have merit?
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been discussed for years. I mean, the private student loan program actually was created by a bank in Ohio back in 1983, 84. But we went eventually over the years and the various presidencies to, you can borrow anything you want as a parent to send your kid to college. And that's why the college costs have exploded.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is, I think, look, Harvard's endowment is $54 billion. Why are they charging tuition at all? Okay. You know, Columbia, that got, was in the news last Friday, they got $400 million taken away from them. Their endowment's $14.9 billion. So
yeah,
why don't the schools have any skin in the game in with regard to, charging these exorbitant fees? The other thing, Chris, is the Grad Plus loan program, which is for graduate students. You know, there are about 40% of those programs that are being funded by this program that the ROI, which is, return on investment for these kids is negative.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to go to Harvard and pay $360,000, you're going to come out with an archaeology degree, you're going to make 50 grand. The math doesn't work.
Of course, the larger question has been raised of who administers the student loan program at all if the Department of Education goes away, as the president would like to make happen. Suggestions have come that it might be done through the Treasury or the Commerce Department or even the Small Business Administration. If not the Department of Education, who would be best suited to handle this?
Well, my thought, one, the Department of Education is not going to get shut down because you need 60 votes in the Senate in order to do that. And they're not going to get it. They may not even get 53 votes.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get to 60. So what you're looking at is a orderly wind down, scale down of the Department of Education. You can see the loans going to Treasury. I haven't figured out, and I'm in conversations, as we speak, about going to the SBA or to the Commerce Department. SBA has a private, has a federal guaranteed loan program, but it's more for corporations.
Yeah, completely different.
Volume.
Yeah, different animal.
Yeah, I mean, the volume is $125 billion a year in student loan origination.
Yeah.
So that's that stuff. I mean, with regard to taking other parts of the department, you could take the Civil Rights Division, which is now getting a lot of attention, in the Department of Education, and move that over to Pam Bundy over at Justice. I mean, she's got a whole division that works on civil rights stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other programs internally in the department that could easily be moved to HHS, Health and Human Services.
Which, a bit of an irony there, talking about HHS taking over some of the functions of the Department of Education, because folks may remember that that's where education was before it became its own department, was health, education, and welfare. So,
yeah, but until 1980, you're absolutely correct. It was the HEW.
Yeah, and who knows, it may be again. Again, Jack Wallace is Director of Government and Public Affairs at YRefi, a private student loan refinance company. Talking about all of this chaos with respect to a student loans, kind of making sense of it all here this morning, but only scratching the surface. And I'm sure that there is more to come. So we may talk again. Jack, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Chris, thanks. And best luck to you and your listeners.
Well, if everything that has been going on in Washington of late, you can be forgiven if you missed this. It was a week ago, last Friday, that President Trump held the first ever cryptocurrency summit at the White House. And the president has said he wants to create a federal stockpile of digital assets and make America the cryptocurrency capital of the world. And certainly there is a lot of money to be made. But there is more to the story than that. The most interesting part of the story really has very little to do with investing in it. And honestly, we were going to, we had planned on making this, talking about this as a Throwback Thursday yesterday, but it ended up getting bumped because there were other more pressing things to talk about. So instead of a Throwback Thursday, we'll make it a Flashback Friday today. With all of the talk about cryptocurrency in general and Bitcoin in particular, which is the most popular cryptocurrency, most well known, what you have heard about in the media is only a very small part of the story. Ann Ahola Ward knows all about this stuff. She is a growth scientist, author, and futurist who is named one of the top 50 inspirational entrepreneurs to watch by Entrepreneur Magazine. And all the way back in February of 2018, when people were first hearing about digital assets, we spoke to her about how the Bitcoin story is far more than just its potential and pitfalls as an investment.
This is not something that was created for the purpose of being traded.
Correct. In the throes of the financial collapse 10 years ago, the creator of Bitcoin decided that, you know, the banking system was corrupt and came up with the idea for decentralized currency, which is what cryptocurrency is, and the blockchain. And that's how Bitcoin came to be. It was out of frustration with the status quo.
One of the things that is a misperception, a myth about this, is that because it is not backed by a government or a central bank or some sort of establishment, that a traditional establishment that we think of, that it is untraceable or that it is somehow unaccountable, unreliable, and all of that. In fact, this is more traceable currency than the dollar bills that we would pull out of our pocket.
Correct. Cash has no trace, right? I mean, you can, in certain instances of bank robbery, maybe they know serial numbers of series, but,
right,
you know, the tracking on that is less than perfect. So, and it's like a Hollywood movie plot. I think that, you know, it requires a public entry in the blockchain.
So every transaction, there is a paper trail, if you will, or a digital trail, where every transaction is traced. And that leads us to that whole blockchain concept. And again, this is something that we have heard about in some of the media reports about how this whole cryptocurrency thing works. But there's not been a whole lot of explanation as to what the blockchain is, who manages it, and how it works. So kind of break this down for us about what is the blockchain and the point you make that this really has implications that go far beyond just cryptocurrency itself.
Absolutely, yes. So the blockchain is really how this all started, because it is a program that a group of cryptologists called cypherpunks came up with, and essentially it is a program that runs on thousands of computers around the world. So it's running in right now in Iceland, it's running right now in Russia and China. And because it's not controlled by a central authority, it is actually controlled by thousands of people, because thousands of people are maintaining this software and verifying it. So when people are mining for Bitcoin, that's a term you'll hear a lot, they're basically verifying transactions that are happening on the blockchain. The blockchain, the analogy I always use is it's a ledger. It's like a company has a ledger where they have the profit and losses, but those are kept private behind closed doors. The blockchain is a public version of that, that is, people use their own signatures with, that they can generate dynamically, but there's a trace to every transaction. So I think the blockchain is an awesome thing to use for startups, but for even for people in, you know, like Venezuela, who have hyperinflation they're dealing with, they can transfer money using the blockchain in an anonymous way, but there is a trace of it because they're using a key that is attached to them that only they know.
So
I think it's hard to understand, but by it being decentralized, you have many eyes watching it in many places and verifying it. And so there's an incentive on everybody's part to make sure that it's working properly.
So it is, in a sense, And again, maybe this is wildly oversimplifying it, but it's in a sense kind of the way the World Wide Web works itself, is that you have a series of computers that are interconnected and handling traffic going back and forth and, you know, guiding all of this internet traffic to where it needs to be. The blockchain is kind of the same thing with these digital currency transfers.
Exactly. It's a ledger that is maintained on thousands of computers and verified by independent people. And, you know, I think the coolest use of it, and something that has gotten a lot of attention, is smart contracts. So the ability for a third party to verify payment and, you know, these smart contracts really present a lot of opportunity for entrepreneurs to skip all these steps and legal fees. And it's just kind of amazing how people are using it. So it's essentially, by not having a central authority and empowering all these individual people, it becomes something much more powerful.
So basically, the concept of the blockchain is really the more exciting thing than the cryptocurrency itself. As we peel back the layers, everybody gets excited about this Bitcoin thing because of the enormous investment returns that some people are getting. But you peel back that and you find that this is an actual currency, and there are a lot of ways that it could revolutionize financial transactions. And then you peel back that layer, and behind that you have the blockchain, which has the potential to revolutionize any number of areas that need some sort of third party verification outside of the traditional regulatory structure.
Exactly. And, you know, we take for granted that we have a stable system here in the United States, but in countries where there's border disputes,
sure,
or there's corruption in government,
mm-hmm,
people are able to move their money and save their money. You know, like refugees, for example, when they're fleeing their country, they can't take their money with them. But if they've stored it in exchange or cold storage, they can access that from anywhere in the world. So it gives people who don't have access to normal banking systems like we do here in the States, it gives them the opportunity to do it, which I think is really powerful.
Yeah. So, like we said, a lot more to this than what we hear in the media, and it really signals what could be a revolution in a number of ways that we have just scratched the surface.
Exactly. I would just, honestly, if someone's just starting out, I would recommend they just start searching, you know, the terms that they've heard that they don't understand, and just start kind of understanding the jargon, and then start from there. Because it's very intimidating, it's a different way of thinking, but it really doesn't have to be.
Here's our conversation from February of 2018 with noted author and futurist Ann Ohola Ward about the full story behind the Bitcoin and cyber cryptocurrency revolution. Again, there, with all of that, you look at the full story and the big picture of the potential of cryptocurrency and the blockchain in particular. It makes sense that the United States would want to be the capital of the world and the central part of where all of this development is taking place. It is our, not our Throwback Thursday, but our Flashback Friday segment this morning.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Kind of a light day in the broken news. Not a whole lot of dumb criminals or anything like that. We do have a dumb lawsuit, though. This is a New York woman. I mean, what would possess you to do that? New York woman is suing the Girl Scouts, claiming that their cookies contain dangerous heavy metals. Suing the Girl Scouts over their cookies. The class action suit filed this week is asking for $5 million from the Girl Scouts organization after a December study, released December last year, study by GMO Science and Moms Across America, showed that Girl Scout cookies contain high levels of lead, arsenic, mercury, and aluminum. Aluminum? Don't tell the president. He'll want to slap tariffs on it. Just kidding. The Girl Scouts released a statement last month saying heavy metals can occur naturally in the soil and in everyday products. They are not added to the cookies. They don't add mercury and arsenic and lead to their cookies, of course. An article in Forbes later confirmed that the Girl Scout cookies do comply with all safety standards and that the FDA and USDA both allow for some residue of heavy metals in foods at levels that are deemed non-harmful. I can't believe that we have to say this, but there is no evidence that Girl Scout cookies pose any kind of health risk. I mean, outside of the fact that you open up a box of Thin Mints and there's every reason to believe that they will be gone in one sitting. That's a risk. But other than that, that's the only danger that you have with Girl Scout cookies. Come on, man. But they're being sued $5 million because this is America and we can sue, so we will. Sure. Police officer in Bradenton, Florida, took on an unexpected second job as a pizza delivery driver thanks to an alligator in a woman's driveway. Here's the story shared from the Bradenton Police Department. The officer was called to a neighborhood reporting the presence of an 8-foot gator, which is not entirely unusual in the state of Florida. The reptile had taken up residence underneath a car that was parked in the driveway of a woman who had also, as it happened, recently ordered a pizza. The delivery driver arrives on the scene completely unaware of the situation. Fortunately, the officer flagged down the driver and said, "Don't get out of your car. There's a gator in the driveway." So the pizza delivery driver then asked the officer if he could deliver the pizza instead. And so the officer decided to oblige because, I mean, you know, to protect and to serve, in this case, serving pizza. He went to the back of the house to avoid the gator and knocked on the door. The woman, the hungry homeowner, was a bit confused, not expecting the policeman to be knocking on her back door with a pizza in hand. That's not what, it's not the response she expected from the police to reports of an alligator. But she got her dinner, and eventually the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission arrived and safely removed the gator and relocated it safely away from the neighborhood and any Italian restaurants. So, so all's well that ends well. Sometimes police officers have to do all kinds of different things to serve their community. So it's kind of nice. Let's see. A couple of other items here in the broken news this morning. This is kind of interesting. A Maryland man is being charged with making threats of mass violence, including threats to kill the president. That is not a good thing. You can't even joke about that. The Secret Service does not take too kindly to threats on the president's life. Police arrested Brian Ayers at his townhome in Rockville, Maryland, on Tuesday of this week. Detectives say that the Navy veteran, he should know better. He emailed local clergy members last month. He emailed local clergy members threatening to kill President Trump and shoot up his homeowners association. He is in trouble with the law for threatening the president, but as far as threatening to shoot up his homeowners association, that was pretty understandable. I think he'll be forgiven for that part, but president, no, we can't have that. And finally, in the broken news this morning, I said it's kind of a light day. It's kind of a light day, but this one is another instance of an American tourist, and in this case, a social media influencer or social media star, wannabe star, behaving badly. and giving America a black eye elsewhere around the world. Sam Jones, an American influencer who, while in Australia, filmed a video of herself picking up and taking a baby wombat from its mother. Don't mess with wild animals, and especially don't mess with a wild animal mama. It is not a good no matter how cute you may think the animal is, and baby animals are cute, leave them alone. The now-deleted video caught the attention of Australian officials, and the country's Department of Homeland Affairs confirmed that they are now reviewing the visa of Ms. Jones. Wombats are a protected species down under, so not only is it stupid to remove a baby animal from the care of its mother, this is a protected species, and Ms. Jones' actions could potentially violate Australian animal cruelty laws. According to wildlife expert Ron McGill, people need to respect these animals, admire them from a distance, but don't try to get up close and get pictures. Don't try to pet one, and certainly don't try to pick up a baby from its mother. She was lucky that the mama wombat didn't attack. I mean, those wombats can be kind of mean, right? Well, any animal can be kind of mean if you start messing with the baby animals. That's just not a real... Ms. Jones should be happy that the only thing that she has to deal with now is maybe the revocation of her travel visa. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And by the way, on behalf, if anybody happens to be listening in Australia this morning via the World Wide Web or listening to the podcast, if you're listening in Australia, I will apologize on behalf of all Americans for this idiot's behavior. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
We tell the stories of our men and women in the military and first responders each Sunday morning on WFIN. Hi, this is Ben Bueller Garcia, your host for American Warrior Radio. Our mission is to educate and inform the public not only about those who serve, but those who support them. We also share issues of importance to veterans and their families. Join us for American Warrior Radio, Sunday mornings at 6 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We were talking about this yesterday. It was the fifth anniversary of COVID-19 being declared a national emergency. This weekend will mark the fifth anniversary of Ohio starting their shutdown, closing businesses and schools and telling people to stay home and all of that. And we were off and running the COVID-19 pandemic. A YouGov survey that was conducted earlier this month, they asked people about the pandemic. It was really wild. 21% of the 1,134 U.S. adults who were part of this survey, 21% said that COVID-19 is still a pandemic to this day. 21%, 19% said that it is a pandemic that will never end. 51% feel that it is no longer a pandemic in 2025, I think. You know, obviously that's where most of us are, 51%. But they asked, do you think that you may have contracted COVID-19 at any time since the pandemic began? 36% of those in the survey say they definitely contracted COVID-19 at some point. 13% they probably did. 12% say probably not. And 31% said definitely not. So just about as many said that they definitely did as definitely did not. 9% were not sure. They asked, how many times do you think you have been infected with COVID-19? How many times? 24% said once, 15% said twice, 6% said three times. Interesting. Would you say, this was another one of the questions they asked, would you say that the worst COVID-19 infection you had was severe, moderate, or mild? 48% said moderate, 38% said mild, just 13% said that their case, their infection of COVID-19 was severe. And this might be the most telling question they asked, is the United States doing enough to prepare for future pandemics? 50% said the U.S. should do more. 23% say that we are doing just about the right amount to prepare for a future pandemic. 4% thought we should be doing less, and 23% were not sure. So kind of interesting, the thoughts of average Americans 5 years after the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. I know some folks be celebrating St. Patrick's Day over the weekend. St. Patty's Day isn't technically until Monday, but of course we won't be here. Well, yeah. Kyra won't be here on Monday, so we'll celebrate St. Patty's Day.
Well, people are celebrating already. Well, that's with what it I mean. Being on a Monday. Yeah. They're celebrating all weekend.
All weekend long. All
plus
weekend
Monday.
Long. Yeah.
It's a 3-day weekend.
If you need an excuse for a 3-day weekend, here you go.
There you go.
So celebrating early St. Patrick's Day with a collection of Irish recipes from Kyra's Kitchen this morning. My wife Kyra has joined us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So, first of all, this is a one-pot Irish chicken.
Yes.
We got a lot of chicken recipes. They're like chicken. Chicken
I know.
Is so virtual. Oddly enough.
It's the cheapest, like, out there right now.
Yeah, well,
meat-wise, and I mean, really.
And it's ironic because, I mean, eggs are through the roof, but chicken is cheaper.
And I was wondering about that the other day. I'm like, why is that?
Somebody, I saw something on a story online, and I wish I could source it. I wish I could tell you and credit wherever I read this, but they said it's because broilers are different than laying hens. Laying hens are typically older.
Okay.
Because they keep them around longer because they like broilers, the ones that we eat, are generally very young.
Okay.
And so they come to market before they get a chance to get bird flu.
Okay.
So
got it. Got it.
That's why they are not as impacted by the bird flu as our laying hens. But anyway, I digress. It is a one pot Irish chicken here for St. Patty's Day.
Yes. So you have a dry rub for the chicken, which is 1 teaspoon basil, 1 teaspoon smoked paprika, 1/2 teaspoon onion powder, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, and salt and pepper to taste. Then you have your four. I did drumsticks. You could probably do any type of a bone chicken. You might even be able to do a boneless chicken if you want to try it. 4 slices of bacon cooked and fat reserved, 1 tablespoon of butter, 1/4 head of cabbage roughly chopped, 4 potatoes sliced, 1/4 cup of onion sliced, 1/4 cup of chicken stock, salt and pepper to taste. So mix all the dry rub ingredients together in a large Ziploc. Add the drumsticks, shake to coat the drumsticks, and then set that aside. In a large iron skillet, cook the bacon until crisp, remove from the skillet, place on a paper towel, add the chicken to the skillet, and brown on all sides. If it doesn't have to be all the way cooked through because you are then going to put this in the oven.
Okay.
So place your chicken with your bacon, drain some of the grease from the pan, and add a little butter. Place the cabbage in the pan and saute for 2 to 3 minutes. Add the potatoes, the onions, the bacon, and the chicken stock to the pan. Stir well to combine, scraping the bottom, getting all that yummy stuff that's on the bottom back in there or up into your sauce. Then stir well to combine and arrange the drumsticks on top of the cabbage mixture. Place in your preheated oven at 375 degrees. Bake it for about 40 to 45 minutes or until completely cooked through, and enjoy.
Yeah. That's and I guess the cabbage and the potatoes make it Irish.
Yes.
That's the,
yes.
Otherwise, it's just a one-pot chicken recipe.
Yes, yes.
One-pot Irish chicken
recipe.
And this is an easy Irish soda bread to go along with that. Yes.
So this was really easy. So 4 cups of all-purpose flour plus a little bit extra for kneading, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1 3/4 cup of milk, and 3/4 teaspoons of vinegar. So preheat your oven to 425 degrees. Line a baking sheet with parchment paper. Measure out the milk in a large measuring cup. Add the vinegar. Combine and let it stand for 5 to 10 minutes. In a large mixing bowl, whisk together the flour, the baking soda, and your salt. Make a well in the center of the dry ingredients. Pour in the milk mixture. Using a fork, mix until just combined. The dough should be soft but not wet and sticky. Turn the dough out onto a lightly floured surface. Knead it for just a few minutes, then form it into a round loaf. Be careful not to overknead it, as it'll make the bread even tougher, and it's just not good.
It's a very thick, heavy bread anyway, so you don't want it tough.
No. Yeah. Place the dough on the prepared baking sheet and using a sharp knife, cut an X in the top. This helps to make the bread cook evenly.
Okay.
Bake in your preheated oven for about 30 to 40 minutes or until the bread is golden brown. Remove the loaf from the oven. Let it cool just for about 10 minutes because this is really good. Mm-hmm. Slice it up and enjoy it warm.
You want it warm, but obviously not hot.
Yes.
Easy Irish soda bread.
Yes.
And then for dessert, maybe the most Irish recipe that we have this morning.
It was so good.
It is really good. An Irish coffee pie.
Yes. So this was yummy. So this was a half a cup of half and half, 2.5 teaspoons of instant espresso powder, 8-ounce package of large marshmallows, 1 tablespoon of whiskey, 8 ounces of whipped topping thawed, a 9-inch graham cracker crust, and chocolate shavings if you would like.
Mm-hmm.
So add cold water and ice to a large shallow bowl or baking dish. I used like a plastic tote. Mm-hmm. Transfer to the freezer. Let that sit in the freezer. Then in a small bowl, combine your half and half and espresso until the espresso powder has dissolved. In a medium saucepan over low heat, add the marshmallows and the half and half mixture. Stir constantly until the marshmallows are melted, about 10 minutes or so. Remove from heat and put that in that ice bath.
Okay.
Place the saucepan right into the ice bath and keep stirring up those marshmallows until it's cooled. Pour in your whiskey. Stir until well combined. Remove the saucepan from the ice bath. Fold in your whipped topping to the marshmallow mixture. Transfer that to your graham cracker crust. Cover and refrigerate for at least 4 hours or overnight. Top with some chocolate shavings before serving and enjoy.
It is really good.
It is.
It is so smooth.
Oh,
I mean,
I
it is really, really smooth.
It was good. I gave some to my friend yesterday at work, and she's like, that was really good. Yeah, I was like,
really,
I know.
Really, really yummy.
Yes.
And I would imagine you could take that as a base and create really all kinds of different flavors. I mean, this is an Irish coffee pie, but you could do this with any number of
different flavors
with just that basic recipe because it was really, really, really good.
It was good.
So the recipes for the one-pot Irish chicken, the easy Irish soda bread, and the Irish coffee pie are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page.
Yes, they are.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook is where you can find that on social media. And also we have it linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. Be sure to follow the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page for all of the recipes each week. And happy St. Patty's Day.
Yes. Have a great weekend.
Make sure that you're wearing green while you're making these recipes.
On Monday, especially.
There you go.
You're gonna get pinched.
Recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday morning on the program, the U.S. Postal Service has launched a campaign in the month of March reminding drivers to play it safe around their 250,000 delivery vehicles that are on the road every day. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.